type of girl I like to fill up on. In the water, really wanna rock a boat like a hurricane in a perfect storm, Lord. Ask her where she on her way to. Said a holla Eva. Say she love the North Shore. Bikini top, black Scots, and then board shorts. Paddle out, paddle out. Can I wait in your water? Can I wait in your water? Can I wait in your water? Till I catch your wave, Lord. Can I wait in your water? Can I wait in your water? Can I wait in your water?
You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'm so happy to have Craig Santos Perez here in the studio. Craig, welcome to Living Writers and down to the basement here, our underground.
Half a day, T, and to all the listeners. I'm so honored to be here.
Thanks for choosing today's songs today. What did we just hear, Craig?
Yes, you heard the song called Wade in the Water, and the songs I chose for today are all Pacific Islander reggae music, which is what I love and listen to.
Did you, so you listen to it now. Was that something you listened to when you were growing up too?
Yes, for sure. Growing up on the small Pacific Island of Guam, you know, we're surrounded by reggae beats, and it's music that always brings me back home.
And so especially playing it, hearing it today here at Michigan feels really good.
Yes, bringing some sunshine to the winter here in the Midwest.
It does, right away. Well, I should say you're in town. You're in town. You've been here the whole week. You are like the star poet of the Zelle Visiting Writers series. Like you've got the residency week. The students have been able to meet with you and talk about their packets of poems that they're working on, the ones in the MFA program. You've got a reading tomorrow at the Art Museum at UMA in the Helmut Stern Auditorium at 5:30. And then a craft talk on Friday morning at 10 a.m. In the Union at the Anderson Room on eco-poetry. So tomorrow for the reading, Craig, will you be reading from the book on the table with us, Call This Mutiny, Uncollected Poems?
Well, first I want to just acknowledge the Helen Zelle series for inviting me to be the Distinguished Writer in Residence. It's been a wonderful week so far, meeting with the graduate MFA students and all the talented writers here at the University of Michigan. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to giving a craft talk on Friday as well as a reading tomorrow. My reading for tomorrow night will actually focus on my 2020 poetry collection entitled Habitat Threshold. And it is a collection of environmental poetry. The book on the table is entitled Call This Mutiny, and it's came out in 2024, and it's a series of what's called uncollected poems. So these are poems I've written maybe over the past 20 years that did not quite fit in my previous collection. So hence they are uncollected, but now finally collected together.
Yes, with Omnidon Publishing.
Yes.
So, Craig, what does that, like, why did you decide this was the time for these poems, Call This Mutiny, like, to be put together and out in the world in this way?
Partly because I really love these poems, and I, you know, desperately wanted them to fit into my other books so that they can have a larger life beyond their individual publications. But they just didn't quite, you know, fit into some of the other books, whether it be style or theme. And so I was happy that Omnidon was willing to, you know, bring these poems together, give them a house to live in, or, you know, I often think about books like little canoes that carry stories. And so, you know, happy to have this book kind of bring these poems together and carry them out into the world. And so they're all poems that speak to, you know, being a Pacific Islander, poems about migration, diaspora. There are a lot of political and historical poems as well. Some of them take place on Guam, in Hawaii, where I lived before, as well as in California, where I currently live. And, you know, so just really grateful that Omnidom was willing to put this book together and to give these poems a home.
It's so interesting to hear the backstory on this, Craig, because for me, I didn't realize these were poems that had been with you for like potentially even the last 20 years or so. Mm-hmm. And I love the title, Call This Mutiny, because of the connections of the word mutiny with resistance,
yes.
As well as, and refusal, but as well as connections to ships and boats and landings and setting out, right? I'd have never heard of a mutiny taking place in a canoe, but I'm sure it has as well. Like, all sorts of resistance can happen. But I guess actually now I have, because in this book, one of the poems addresses how many indigenous peoples got into a special kind of a canoe and went out to meet Magellan.
Yes.
And so they were the ones that discovered those ships that were coming close to them.
Yes. So that's the title comes from one of the major poems in the book, which I wrote in 2021. And I was actually invited to write this poem because 2021 was the 500-year anniversary of Magellan's circumnavigation of the globe. And in the year 1521 was when Magellan and his crew and the galleons arrived in Guam. And Guam then became the first Pacific island to be, quote-unquote, discovered by Europeans, which unfortunately also meant that we became the first island in the Pacific to be colonized by Spain. And so in 2021, Spain was commemorating this voyage as, you know, one of the great voyages in world history, and asked me, an organization which I will not name, asked me to write a poem to honor Magellan.
So from Spain? You're like, let's just leave
not
it
say
there.
Because,
okay.
Because yes. What happened is.
No, I understand. Okay.
The poem I ended up writing was much more decolonial. I wanted to kind of subvert this celebratory imperialist narrative. And so they did not. When I sent them my poem, which was very critical of Spanish imperialism, it was rejected from the various commemorative activities that they had planned throughout the globe. And so, hence this poem, you know, kind of did not have a home, but I wanted the politics of it to circulate, which is why I ended up titling this book, Call This Mutiny. And a lot of my poetry is very decolonial and very critical of, you know, colonialism on Guam, as well as its impact on my indigenous ancestors, the Chamorro people.
Yes, I have so many questions now that we do. I do want us to talk about the Chamorro people and what this means to you in your way, like of who you've decided to become with your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was born and raised on Guam, and Guam is one island in the Marianas archipelago, is what we're called, and the whole archipelago is a homeland of the indigenous Chamorro people. And Guam was colonized by Spain from the 16th century up to the Spanish-American War of 1898, at which point we became a U.S. colony. And we are still a colony, or what's called a territory, to this day. And growing up on Guam, I was assimilated into American culture, learned English, learned about American literature and history and politics, of course, watched American TV and movies, played American sports, ate American food. There's a bunch of McDonald's on Guam growing up. And a lot of my own indigenous culture was suppressed because I was kind of the colonial politics of the island. And so a lot of my work does push back against those politics and tries to reclaim and revitalize my Chamorro culture through poetry.
And what does that What does that mean to you, using some of the Chamorro language, imagery?
Yeah, so a little bit of both of those things. And then also kind of telling Chamorro stories. And, you know, because growing up on Guam, this American school system there, you know, never taught us our own culture or our own literature. And so, you know, the only time I was surrounded by my culture was when I was surrounded by family. And times that I got to listen to my grandparents, my elders, my relatives, my parents, like, talk story, you know, just in informal family gatherings, to me were, you know, the best parts of growing up. And, you know, as a child, we were taught just to listen to our elders. So I didn't necessarily speak or join these conversations, but instead just tried to absorb the stories. And it wasn't until I was an adult, you know, going to school and wanting to kind of tell the stories that I have heard growing up, as well as to tell the stories about, you know, Guam's political status, its history, as well as kind of to celebrate its various and beautiful ecologies.
Do you think, is that why you think you gravitated towards the MFA program, to be able to have like a place to think about telling the stories and to think seriously about how ways to create them and send them into the world?
Yes, that was exactly my motivation. After receiving my undergraduate degree and studying literature and art history, you know, I wanted to...
Was that in Arizona?
So this was actually in Southern California.
In Southern California, yes. Okay.
And, you know, I wanted to attend an MFA program so that I can write a book about Guam and Chamorro experiences. That was my goal. And I...
Had you looked and seen, like, what's out there?
Up to that point, I had not read or been introduced to any of Chamorro literature, any Pacific literature at all.
In print.
And so, you know, like many other minority and indigenous writers, like, you know, wanted to write the books and stories that we had never seen before.
And that you'd been absorbing.
Exactly. And so through my MFA program at the University of San Francisco, I was able to, you know, write what would become my first book of poetry, which was published in 2008. And it's titled From Unincorporated Territory, Hacha.
What is Hacha?
Hacha means, in Chamorro, it means one, or like the first. And so to me, it represented kind of my first attempt to tell these stories. And it would also be the first book in a series of books that I have written about Guam. And so it's a connected series. And they're all titled From Unincorporated Territory, then they have a different Chamorro name.
I love that. And is the second, what is the second one?
The second one is titled Tsaina, which means elder. The third is titled Guma, which means home. The fourth is titled Lukau, which means a procession. And the most recent book is titled Amut, which means medicine. And that is the most recent one was published in 2022, and it received the National Book Award.
Congratulations on this. Yes. And how it must be especially, I wonder if it is especially wonderful to know that it's this, the book itself is part of this larger ongoing series and vision you had.
Yes. And I've been working on it for 22 years now. And, you know, each of the books tells kind of a different aspect of, like I said, Guam's history and culture and environment, as well as kind of different Chamorro experiences, both stories from my family as well as of my own migrations. And it's an ongoing series, so hopefully the next installment from unincorporated territory will appear maybe in the future sometime. I'm not sure when yet.
I know I was trying to twist your arm to read a new poem, but you said, oh, it's on the laptop back at the place. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take a short break and then we'll come back. Today on the program, Craig Santos Perez is here. You've got Living Writers. The book on the table is Call This Mutiny. We'll hear from it today. And you've just been able to hear all the other wonderful books that are also out there. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Reverend Andrew behind the glass. We'll be back.
Girl, I know you're playing hard to get. Acting like I don't see you. I watch you chum the water, waiting for a bite. But I only bite if you will it. We both know, I know you feel it. Afraid to show, girl, just admit it. Our cards will fold with my two. A royal blush, and we'll cash it in. Ooh, you give me some feeling. Yeah. Ooh, you give me some feeling. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Put these games on the side and watch the sunset tonight. Talk about the things that you like, girl. Talk about the things that we like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I find a way through to the you inside of you. Wanna know the girl behind a self-portrait that you drew, yeah. The real picture of you, the real picture of you. Trying to choose the right words to phrase it. But I'm addicted to your smile. I haven't seen it in a while. Got me wanting to arrange a visit. We both know, I know you feel it. Afraid to show, girl, just admit it. Our cards will fall with my two. A royal flush, and we'll cash it in.
Just tuning in. I'm so glad you did. Today on Living Writers, Craig Santos Perez is here in the studio. The book on the table with us today, out with Omnidon Publishing, is Call This Mutiny, Uncollected Poems. Thanks again for picking the songs today, Craig. And I'd love to give a shout out also to JAV for pulling the songs today. Between his classes at school too. So anyway, that shout out to JAV and to Reverend Andrew for being behind the glass. Craig, with Call This Mutiny, Uncollected Poems, I also loved after reading the book that these were uncollected poems because it felt like the poems themselves had resisted being part of anything. Mm. And until this moment, and now they're together in this moment. But they had a history of resistance.
Yes.
Is that reading too much into it?
No, I love how you said that. You know, like I said, I think the earliest poem in this book might be 20 years old. And, you know, so to me, I was, yeah, just as excited to actually have, you know, like I said, to put them in this canoe and launch them into the world. I haven't done any events for this book, partly because in 2024, I did move to San Diego, California, and started a new job. And so...
Not the time to just do
to
a tour.
To go on a book tour, exactly. And so, so it's, you know, it's really exciting to see the book on the table since I haven't done any events for it.
Well, thanks so much for having Living Writers be your kickoff to this, yes. Like the now Call This Mutiny is out on a world tour. And, you know, before we start talking about it more, I'll read the bio in the back of the book. And then we'll go from there. Dr. Craig Santos Perez is an indigenous Chamorro from the Pacific island of Guahan. also known as Guam. He is the co-editor of 9 anthologies and the author of 7 poetry collections and the monograph Navigating Chamorro Poetry, Indigeneity, Aesthetics, and Decolonization. He earned an MFA in creative writing from the University of San Francisco and a PhD in comparative ethnic studies from the University of California, Berkeley. He has received the National Book Award, the American Book Award, many awards, actually, folks, and the George Garrett Award for Outstanding Community Service and Literature from AWP. And as we heard earlier, he currently lives and works in Santa Barbara.
San Diego.
San Diego. Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
Yeah, San Diego, Santa Barbara is very beautiful, too.
I mean, I feel like I'm just dreaming of California. I'm bedazzled by California.
California dreams.
Yeah. It's like anywhere right now would be so super. but yes, San Diego. So Craig, also, what did it mean to you to read to receive the Outstanding Community Service and Literature from AWP? Because that does speak to the vision, I think, that you were talking about before we had a break.
Yeah. So, you know, in some ways, you know, obviously, even though I'm so honored to have received the National Book Award and the American Book Award, I think that award for community service is perhaps the most meaningful award I've received, because it was in honor of, you know, the 20 years of service that I've given to kind of raise awareness and support Pacific Islander literature here in the United States. And you mentioned I have edited 9 anthologies. Most of those have been on Pacific Islander literature. And, you know, just as I, you know, partly became a poet, to kind of create a Chamorro literature. And, you know, that's also the reason why I became an editor, is to give other Pacific writers a space where they can share their voices and tell their stories as well. And so, you know, I've spent a lot of time editing and putting together those anthologies and bringing them into the world. The most recent one is titled Indigenous Pacific Islander Eco-Literatures. And that was published by the University of Hawaii Press in 2022. And it features about 100 Pacific authors from across the Pacific and our global diaspora. And
living writers, contemporary?
Almost all living. Some have passed away, but we were able to receive permissions from their families or their trust to republish their work. And it's multi-genre. It covers many environmental themes, which is a major subject in Pacific literature. And, you know, I was very happy to have that published, especially given kind of the impacts of climate change on the Pacific. And so that award for community service was, you know, not only for my editing, but also for a lot of the mentoring and support I've given to younger Pacific authors who are now publishing, winning awards, teaching. And, you know, so it's obviously like that work is so important to me, and maybe in some ways even more important than my own work. And so, yeah, it was a great honor to receive that from the Association of Writers and Writing Programs.
I am so glad you were recognized for this. And I hope it continues to be so with this work, because it's creative work in itself, but it also takes another, I imagine it would take an emotional and psychic energy to also keep going with it, because of feeling perhaps the responsibility in some ways, like it's a calling too. Mm-hmm. Especially as you start to know more and more of the Pacific community. Mm-hmm. And they become actual people, not just names or attached to poems or stories or other genres that you're seeing.
Yes, for sure. And I'm currently working with a team of editors right now who are putting together an anthology of queer Pacific writing.
Oh, nice.
Which I'm so excited to bring into the world, hopefully in a couple of years. And that will be my 10th anthology. So that will be quite the milestone. And I may have to retire from editing after that. Since
yeah, 10. I was just going to say, is there like an anthology group or support network for folks that like this is your area, one of your areas?
Yeah, I mean, it's editing is a lot of work. But like I said, it's also feels like a deep cultural responsibility that I've taken on. And, thankfully, though, there are younger Pacific editors who are coming up, who will hopefully, I can pass the baton to as they bring out new anthologies and just imagine new ways of publicizing our work and supporting our region's development of our literature. And we'll see how it goes. So
yes, yeah. Well, Craig, you were saying the series, the Unincorporated Territories. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose poems? And you mentioned being a poet. Like this is why do you think, from the stories that you were absorbing and the lessons from your family and others or elders in the community, why do you think for you it was poetry that would become the vessel?
I think for me, it really happened in high school.
It did.
I was fortunate. So I grew up on Guam until I was 15 years old. And then my whole family migrated to California. And at my new high school, I was lucky to have many great English literature teachers. And they introduced me to a lot of contemporary writers, living writers, diverse writers. And I was really inspired, especially reading, ethnic minority and indigenous writers tell their own people's stories. And, I was really taken by poetry, especially. I think I wasn't conscious of it then, but looking back, I think because of kind of the rhythms and orality that poets are able to capture on the page reminded me a lot of kind of the oral stories I had listened to growing up. And so even though obviously a written text is very different from orature, I feel like writing can be an extension of the oral tradition. And so to me, that's kind of how I gravitated towards poetry. And the more I studied it and wrote it, just the more in love I fell into with the form. Now, with that said, I do write prose as well. So I do also write nonfiction as well as fiction. And I think prose offers me kind of more expansive space for narratives and expanded narratives, character development, dialogue, scenes, and so on. And so I am... Over the past maybe 6 years or so, I have been writing much more prose, and hopefully I'll maybe have a nonfiction book out and a short story collection out in the future.
So you have these projects going on concurrently.
Yes. And sometimes it makes me crazy trying to edit and write poetry and write prose. And I also am a professor, so I'm also teaching. And for me, it's a fun challenge to both write across genres as well as to, do other forms of kind of literary production like anthologies. And just keeps me growing, I feel, as a person, as an artist, and as a writer. But yeah, the downside is then every project takes so much longer because I'm working on multiple projects simultaneously. Sometimes I wish I could just focus on one and get it done quick and then go to the next one and so on.
But you don't lose steam on any of them, though, because that would be like, I think, I wonder if that's like one of your ways of working, mm-hmm. is having these different things to move among is actually fuels you instead of, I don't know.
That's a great point. Yeah. I'm definitely never bored because I always have something to work on. If, kind of academic writing gets stale, then I can move to poetry. And if I get bored with that or stuck, I could write some fiction. If I get tired of my own work, I could do some editing.
Right. And you said that before we went on air, because I said, oh, it's always busy when you come for to be the distinguished visiting poet. And you said, well, I'm happy to be busy because I don't like being bored.
That's true.
Well, let's take a short break and then we'll come back. And I promise when we come back, everyone, Craig Santos Perez will read something from Call This Mutiny, Uncollected Poems, out with Omnidon Publishing. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Reverend Andrew behind the glass. You've got Living Writers, and we'll be back.
Give me love, give me love, she give me good love. I just see it, send me love myself. And she's a blessing from above. My girl, you know you're good, so anything you need, let me know. She give me love, give me love, give me love, she give me good love. I just see it, send me love myself. And she's a blessing from above. My girl, cool as the breeze flow. It's a joy to watch your love grow. And she blessed with the beauty, fear fanciness, she's a cutie. Not just now, she choose me, nothing she not take the argument closely. She's solid as a rock on me too, she like when berries are sing, tempted to touch. Like a girl, every time you pass my way, words can't explain how me love you so much. Me feel it from 19, no long from what day. Me woulda never break your heart now. So don't worry yourself, my girl. We coulda never break your heart, so don't worry yourself, my girl. Cause anytime you want in love, just let me know, baby girl. And I will be there if you give it up. I get no say, yeah. She give me, give me love, give me love, give me love. She give me good love. See, it's a me love myself. And she's a blessing from above. My girl, you know you're good, so anything you need, let me know. She give me love, give me love, give me love, give me good love. See, it's a me love myself. And she's a blessing from above. My girl, cool as the breeze flow. It's a joy to watch your love grow. Yeah, she bless, yes, God bless her with a cute face. But the personality, I would jam me close. Like assassin, I say, me no want no boring girl. Her sense, yeah, you mommy love the most. Me woulda make time for her any day. Keep the girl close, so the love nasty. Any rumor that rise up, me boss it like my father. Me no watch me say anyway. Give me love, give me love, give me love. She give me good love. I see it, say me love myself. And she's a blessing from above. My girl, you know you're good, so anything you need, let me know. She give me love, give me love, give me love, give me good love. You see it, say me love myself. She's a blessing from above. My girl, cool as the breeze flow. It's a dive, me watching love grow.
Welcome back, everybody. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time. Today on the program, Craig Santos Perez is here. Call This Mutiny, Uncollected Poems, the book on the table with us. And Living Writers is actually, Craig kindly has said, this is the first stop on his book tour for this book, which has been in the world for a while. And you can get it. And you can get it tomorrow. I know Literati will be having them at the reading. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's having its day now. Every book has its day. And it starts now, Craig.
I love that. Thank you. Well, since it starts now, let me read the title poem, Call This Mutiny, and it is addressed to Ferdinand Magellan on the 500-year anniversary of his circumnavigation and arrival to Guam in 1521. Call This Mutiny. My refusal to praise the first circumnavigation of the globe and to herald your name bestowed upon ships, waterways, and galaxies. Call this mutiny, my retelling of the story from our perspective, Chamorros standing on the shores of Guam, sighting three monstrous ships. They boarded outrigger canoes and flew towards first contact. The date, March 6, 1521, according to your calendar, not ours, in the year of your Lord, not ours. Call this mutiny. We discovered you, lost and drifting in our already named ocean. We saved you, diseased and starving. Yet you mistranslated trade as theft, branded us ladrones, thieves. You disembarked, burned a village, and killed 7 Chamorros. First, violence. Call this mutiny. My refusal to affirm that you put Guam on the map. You put us in the crosshairs of empire. Our history did not begin with your arrival. We navigated this sea long before you ventured beyond continents. Call this mutiny. My refusal to believe that Guam is destiny's landfall, that your presence was manifest by the divine doctrine of discovery. We weren't destined to be the first colony in the Pacific, used as a port for the galleon trade between Acapulco and Manila. We weren't destined to be baptized in our own holy blood by the sharp edge of the cross. You called us thieves, but it was your people who looted the world. You called us savage, but it was European civilization that mastered savagery. Call this mutiny, because today I commemorate Guam as more than a mere dot in the latitudes and longitudes of imperial history. I commemorate the quincentennial of Chamorros thriving beyond the vicious wake of your voyage. I commemorate Chamorro resilience, which is so vast no armada of galleons can ever circumnavigate.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun to write that poem. And to, like I said, kind of subvert that imperial narrative of Magellan's voyage and the kind of celebratory story that, you know, Spain was trying to tell through its activities in 2021. And it was, you know, it felt good in a decolonial sense to kind of flip the script and to celebrate my own people, that we still survive and we're still trying to, you know, maintain and revitalize our culture and kind of reconnect to our ancestry and to really honor my ancestors who, you know, survived what they call first contact, but which I tried to put in this poem as first violence. And to think about, you know, where Guam exists on the map and in the global imagination, and to kind of represent my homeland, you know, as more than just a stop on kind of Magellan's quest, but as an important site of resistance and resilience.
And in 2021, Craig, was this, I know you said after you were invited to write for this, were you able to, in your own way, somewhere, like, have this poem out in the world? Because in your acknowledgments, in the back of Call This Mutiny, you can see that many of these poems found homes out in journals and publications around the world, New Zealand, Australia, and many places.
Yes, so
I didn't see Spain on the list.
So what I ended up doing after, you know, I was commissioned to write it and it was rejected, I ended up sharing it on social media. So I put it on my Facebook and Twitter accounts. And then, you know, other people started sharing it. So it kind of went viral in that way. And then it was eventually published in the journal. And so that felt good just to get the poem out there, you know, in small ways. And then
That's not small.
But at least it circulated amongst my friends and community online. And, you know, then obviously entered into this book and kind of gave the book its title as well.
And that's when you were bringing, did you approach Omnidon Publishing with this idea for this book? Or did they say, hey, Craig, what do you have going on? Because were you aware, because you were obviously aware that these poems, you know, you wanted to find a house, you mm-hmm. know, for them to be out in the world in?
A little bit of both. I've been grateful to be with the same publisher for almost 20 years now.
That is a gift.
And so, you know, they will often, you know, email me. The editor, Rusty Morrison, is a good friend and mentor. And so she would, you know, reach out to me, you know, say if I'm working on anything. And, you know, at the time I was just starting to think about, you know, putting together this book, and proposed it to them, and they were excited about it. And then came out in 2024, and it was fun because all the poems were already written. It's a little bit easier than my other books.
Because then you were almost, and you had distance from them too. So did you put on your editor hat in a different way than you had for unincorporated territories?
Yes, for sure.
Really? Yeah?
Yeah, especially because I did edit some of the poems, even though they had been previously published. But then also just trying to figure out how to order the poems, how to structure the book overall.
So yeah, how did you do that? That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, so some of it was intuitive. And so the book itself does not have sections. So it is a series of poems, and I tried to kind of choose poems that spoke to each other thematically, or maybe had formal similarities. And there are some longer poems and shorter poems. There are some narrative poems and lyric poems. There are poems that do play with the visual space of the page, so like visual poems. And, you know, so just try to kind of feel my way through the structure and to put the poems in the order that made kind of an intuitive sense. Mm-hmm. In terms of giving the poems, you know, friends to speak to or to be around.
Yeah, that's a real thing, mm-hmm. especially since you weren't set on, oh, I'm going to look at the chronology of right. when these poems right. were written.
Yeah, I did experiment with that, actually. You so did, yeah. That was like maybe my first kind of organizing principle. And I read it that way, and I didn't really like how it read. And so I scrapped that idea. And then at one point, I also, I think, structured it geographically. So poems about Guam, poems about Hawaii, California, and then some global poems. And that worked okay, but I also didn't love it. And so...
Because it's forcing more separation.
That's how I felt, exactly. That... Yeah. And so with this, you kind of move back and forth. It's kind of unpredictable where you're going to be when you go to the next poem. And I think I liked that better. And that's ultimately what I decided to do.
And I, as a reader coming to it, sitting here, I wish I had a chance to read the unincorporated territories too, because that to me feels maybe more like signature, like mm-hmm. knowing how, like you work a bit more. Whereas this is like, this is a book where I felt like it was, I didn't know what was coming next, mm-hmm. but I liked that. And it felt nice because so many books are so thematically mm-hmm. driven, and there's like, and which is works and creates a certain kind of experience. But this almost felt to me even more, old school, because that's not exactly what I mean, but where the poems are already themselves,
yes.
and they can be, and they deserve to be here in Call This Mutiny, because there's a reason they're together. And they found each other. But there's so much, there's more space between what each one of them is trying or is saying.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, the From Unincorporated series, From Unincorporated Territory, is, you know, I should put my signature, you know, book project. And it's very focused thematically, you know, like I said, on Guam and Chamorro experiences. Whereas, you know, this book called This Mutiny, the poems here, you know, they go beyond that and allow me to kind of spread my wings a little bit more to address other kind of topics that I'm interested in, and to also structure it, you know, as you say, kind of more traditional form of poetry collections, more kind of a miscellany of individual kind of self-contained poems. And you know, I wanted to do that because I also write those kinds of poems, you know, and so for me, it was a chance to showcase you know, this style that I also write in, even though I'm not as known for these kinds of poems.
Especially like the mountain poem stands out to me visually. You've turned the book on its side to get the longer lines that visually create a mountain. Mm-hmm. Was that, and also on your, I found your author site, your WordPress site, Craig. Wow. I hope that's okay.
I didn't know that still existed.
So now I've bumped it back up into like the Google search engine. But there you have like an International Mountain Day. Mm-hmm. And so then when I saw it in the book too, I thought it made sense with eco poetry too. It felt like it's just part of who you are as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I love visual poetry and poetics. And I used to teach that class actually. And I really enjoy experimenting with the page. As I mentioned, I have art history and art background. And so, you know, trying to bring together kind of textuality, orality, and visuality is something I really enjoy doing in my work. And, you know, you mentioned my old blog. I used to also write a lot of blogs. And partly I would put my poems up there, too, as another way to kind of circulate or to publish, right? To make public.
Yes, self-publish.
Exactly.
DIY.
Exactly. And, you know, getting my MFA in the California Bay Area, which is the home of, you know, the small press revolution. And, you know, thinking about alternative, you know, non-mainstream ways that, you know, poets can get our work out there. And
so close to my heart.
Yes. And, you know, because a lot of my poems have political messages as well. So
maybe more important than ever now.
Exactly.
To find alternative ways.
Exactly, yeah.
We're going to take a short break and then we'll be back. Today on the program, Craig Santos Perez is here. Call This Mutiny, Uncollected Poems, the book on the table with us, out with Omnidon Publishing. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be right back.
Have you ever seen the people with so much hospitality? A people so very, very peaceful, filled with love and unity.
Just tuning in, you're just in time, because today on Living Writers, Craig Santos Perez is here in the studio. The book on the table with us, Call This Mutiny, Uncollected Poems. Craig, before we start talking, would you mind reading another poem for us?
Yes, of course.
And people can hear you read tomorrow. There's going to be a reading and a Q&A after the reading at the Art Museum at UMA, 5:30 p.m. And then on Friday, your craft talk on eco-poetry.
Yes, I'm excited for both events and hope to see some of your listeners there tomorrow or Friday. Yes, yeah, so I will read the final poem of the book. And let me give some context to this. I actually wrote this poem. This might be one of the oldest poems here. I wrote it in 2010. And my family moved from Guam to California in 1995. And as I mentioned, I was 15 years old. And I didn't have the chance to go back to Guam until I was 30. So 15 years had passed. And the occasion of me going back home was the publication of my second book, which is From Unincorporated Territory, Saina. And the Guam Humanities Council invited me back home to launch the book in my homeland, to give poetry readings to the public high schools, the university and community college there, as well as several public events. And I'll never forget an experience I had when I visited an English class at actually Guam's oldest public high school. And you might guess it's called George Washington High School. Kind of speaking to that American colonial legacy.
Exactly.
And so I read from my new book to the students, and I noticed that a student was crying at the end of it. And so I approached her just to see if she was okay. And what she said to me really just struck me deeply and kind of was the trigger for this poem. And you'll hear what she said in the poem. It's titled The Pacific Written Tradition. I read aloud from my new book to an English class at one of Guam's public high schools. Afterwards, a student is crying. What's wrong? I ask. She says, I've never seen our culture in a book before. I just thought we weren't worthy of literature. I wonder how many young islanders have dived into the depths of a book only to find bleached coral. We were taught that missionaries were the first readers in the Pacific because they could decipher the strange signs of the Bible. We were taught missionaries were the first authors in the Pacific because they possessed the authority of written words. Today, studies show that Islander students read and write below grade level. It's natural, experts claim. Your ancestors were an illiterate oral people. Do not believe their claim. Our ancestors deciphered signs in nature, interpreted star formations and sun positions, cloud and wind patterns, wave currents, and ocean efflorescence. That's why Master Navigator Papa Mao once said, if you can read the ocean, you will never be lost. Now let me tell you about Pacific written traditions, how our ancestors tattooed their skin with scripts of intricately inked genealogies, how they carved epics into hard wood with a sharpened point, their hands, and the pressure and responsibility of memory. How they stenciled petroglyphic lyrics on cave walls with clay, fire, and smoke. So the next time someone tells you our people were illiterate, teach them about our visual literacies, our ability to read the intertextual sacredness of all things. And always remember, if we can write the ocean, we will never be silenced.
Thank you, Craig.
Yes, thank you for giving me space and time to share that poem with you and to, you know, share this book with you and your audience as well.
I really feel that will resonate. If you can read the ocean, you will never be lost. Mm-hmm. And then how you're changing it slightly mm-hmm. at the end. It feels like something that I imagine when that student got to read this poem, maybe she'll have a copy of this book, the student that you write about in the poem. I just can imagine. I don't know. Have you thought of her again? I know you said you wrote that poem a while ago. So that's. Yes.
And so that student, they were in high school back then. Now they must be in their mid-30s. I wish I knew their name and could give them a copy of this book, because I would, you know, definitely want her like to know how much her comment really impacted me. And I carried, you know, what she said with me over the decades. And honestly, it was something that I felt too, you know, growing up. Like we were never taught our people's literature, like I said, and I always felt very invisible and marginalized, and felt as if our cultures didn't matter at all. And obviously that's part of the colonial project, right? To make us feel worthless, and that our stories don't matter, our cultures don't matter, our language doesn't matter, and to fully accept and embrace, you know, the colonial culture. And so, you know, to me, hearing a student actually articulate that she felt that our people just weren't worthy of literature, you know, felt like I wanted to spend my rest of my life like proving that wrong, that we are worthy of literature, and that the stories of our parents and grandparents and our ancestors, you know, deserve to be in books, deserve to be taught in our classrooms, and that I hope, you know, my work and others will inspire the next generation to continue the movement of, you know, building these textual canoes, if you want to call them that, to carry our stories further into the future.
Because those canoes will be right where they're meant to be as they head out in the ocean. They'll never be lost.
Mm. I love that. We'll never be silenced.
Or silenced. Mm-hmm. Thanks for today, Craig. Thanks for coming down to WCBN.
Yes, thank you, T, and everyone here at the station.
Thanks, folks out there, for listening today. Thanks to Reverend Andrew for engineering and doing Jazz Till Whenever, and to loading in all the equipment and like for the local music show tonight. just hats off to Reverend Andrew. Thanks to JAV for pulling together Craig's songs for today's show. Thanks to Julie and Zell Visiting Writer Series for bringing Craig Santos Perez here. Thanks to my mom for listening, and all of you for listening. Remember, tomorrow you can go and see and hear Craig at the Zell reading at UMA at 5:30 p.m. and then Friday's Craft Talk at the Union at 10 a.m. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.
Good now.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I just texted Paul.
Everyone, welcome to WCBN FN Ann Arbor, your place for Michigan sports radio. I'm your host, Andrew Pipta. We're joined by Bowen. We might be joined by another host, Paul, later on in the show. But today, we got to talk about free agency in the NFL. It's one of the biggest times of the year, the off season. Teams are kind of patching some holes up, trying to get ready for draft season. And there's a lot to talk about, especially with, you know, some of our teams made some moves. Some of them didn't. Some of the teams in this in our world made some of the most baffling moves. Some of the best moves of the off season. So we got to talk about that 100%. So started off though. How are you doing, Bowen?
Good. Good. It's been a while since I've been here due to some personal reasons, but always good to be back.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you've been a great time every single time you're here. So we're glad that you're back. Glad that you get to talk some Philly nonsense, even though they made a good move.
Yeah, we'll get to the move, but you know, I figured we could start with the move that would have been the biggest move of the offseason, the now canceled Max Crosby to the Ravens trade. Obviously, I don't want to spend too much time discussing what could have been, but I was a huge fan when it happened. I think it showed a sign that the Ravens were prepared to go all in with Jesse Minter by fixing their biggest weakness on defense. And ultimately, I think, honestly, I feel like the Ravens lost more than they gained by what they did. I genuinely believe they were fully prepared to go through with the trade, and they just did not like what they saw from the medical deal.
I kind of agree where it's like, I would be a little concerned if I trade for Max Crosby, who, you know, he's still a